Chris Morris speaking to you from the internet. Hello, internet. How's it going? I'm here with Andrew Buckley, and this is our first podcast of this epic thing that we're doing here.
It's epic, too.
Epic. Have I said epic yet? It's going to be called Trilogy. Everything comes in threes.
Well, why are we calling it that, Chris?
I don't remember. What was that email I wrote? drunkenly, apparently.
It was that everything comes in threes, so we're going to do like a three-part podcast, which will be based around us talking about three different things. The first will be a review of some sort, a movie or the like, or TV show, I think we talked about.
Yeah.
Second part would be movie news or entertainment news, and the third part would be comic book review or comic book news, like the new DC Universe, you know, fiasco and that kind of thing.
Fiasco. Fiasco. We're up to a big star
off
already.
Controversy!
Yes, did I just peek there? We better watch that. Okay, yeah, so that's the basic idea. This is for geeks, kind of geek news, kind of like geek news on Hollywood Babylon, a big influence for us here, right?
Yes, in which we need to apologize for stealing Kevin Smith's intro to Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. We have jacked it, we don't have rights to it, so we apologize, and I hope you won't sue us, because we frankly don't have any money to be able to pay you anyways.
Yeah, and he gets people that do stuff for him free all the time, so it kind of works out.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I think it all works out that way.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we'll start off, I think, with our movie review, which is going to be Red State.
Yeah, we picked this for a few reasons. One being that the inspiration for doing these podcasts in the first place was Kevin Smith and the Smodcast Network, and especially Hollywood Babylon, which we both enjoy thoroughly, and everything else that's on there. So we thought we'd do Red State because it's current, because it's getting a lot of news right now.
Yeah, and we both have seen it, obviously, since we're going to review it, but we also have different perspectives on it as well. You watched it online on a laptop. Is that how you, or did you hook up to the TV?
I did not. I hooked up to the TV. I watched it on the TV. It's beautiful.
So you watched it on a TV. Okay. I watched it on the big screen in a theater, a nice theater with about 500 people, with Kevin Smith himself in attendance, which was pretty cool. So, with an audience, which was a lot different than, you know, in your house.
La di da.
I wasn't bragging. I'm just explaining to the people at home, the three people that are listening to this, their different perspectives on this.
Our family members.
Our family members and close personal friends who are taking this on. So just to put that in perspective, we both have seen it in different avenues or venues, I should say.
Yeah.
Seeing it with an audience with people screaming and yelling and laughing and everything was, I'm sure, a lot different than just you sitting there watching it.
Although I did scream and yell and laugh. So.
Yes, but that was more for your own benefit, I believe.
Really was.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll start off, I guess, just by saying I thoroughly enjoyed the film, just to get to the chase, I guess. Wonderful film, I thought. Very different for Kevin Smith to be taking this on. Mostly seen for comedies and the like leading up to this. It's just totally, really a departure for him as far as tone. And definitely surprising. That I want to get too far into spoilers here. We'll kind of try to keep it spoiler-free as much as possible. But just to say there's lots of surprises. No character is safe. I think maybe that is safe to say. Mm-hmm. What was your perspective on it?
I mean, I'm a big fan of the stuff he's done before. Well, I say I'm a big fan. I wasn't a big fan of Clerks. I'm so sorry. I know you love Clerks, but... see, now you're choking.
Now we're peeking.
Clerks was okay. I like it for what he did with it, and I like that he pulled out of Vancouver Film School and took the money and made Clerks, so that's cool. And it was his start, so I mean, I like that. But I love, like, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and Clerks 2 was really good. Jersey Girl is one of my favorites, although... He makes fun of it a lot, and it kind of got panned by critics, but it's still one of my favorites. So Red State was a real different avenue for him to take. Very Tarantino-esque, which I know is one of his, idols. Yeah.
Mentors.
It was very much along those lines. I enjoyed it for what it was. I thought the performance was really good. It looked absolutely stunning. The look of the film was crazy. As far as the cinematography, so
done by Dave Klein. Yeah. Who also did what movie?
Are you trivia?
Yeah, Clerks.
Did you do Clerks?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They all started up together at BFS.
Really?
Him and Mosher and Smitty there.
See, I'm learning stuff here.
And the cat's kicking things. Kitty.
It's
Kitty has attacked the furniture here, apparently. But yes, it's amazing for Dave Klein to have advanced so much. I guess for a while there, he stopped doing Kevin Smith films because they wanted to advance and become more cinematic, I guess, was Harvey Weinstein's opinion, rather than use Dave Klein. And then he brought him back with, I think, Clerks 2. I believe they brought it was either that or Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, I think. They brought back Dave Klein, and he had gone off and done a lot of stuff with TV shows and movies and such. So it was great for him to see that, to be able to, that he was able to advance his skills to the level of that. It looked amazing. Just a tremendous look for the film as Andrew chases around the cat around the room.
It keeps running away from me. that was one, probably one of the favorite parts of it. The fact that it looks so crisp and clean compared to a lot of the other stuff, which of course was stylistic, but it was still very different to see. And the performances in it were, just absolutely awesome.
John Goodman was just the man, I thought, in this one. Doesn't show up till about halfway. Oh, and Michael Parks as well, of course. If anyone possibly could get an Oscar nomination for this, it would be Michael Parks. Just an amazing performance by him.
I think John Goodman could get an Oscar for his performance. He has some great
I think he could, definitely, or maybe should, but I don't think it will happen. If anything, like I said, Michael Parks as the Aben Cooper, I believe is his name. He was great. I also thought that Carrie Bechet as the girl did an amazing job. I was actually shocked to find out that she was the female lead in Scrubs for the final season. I remember watching that season and being delighted that she was that girl, Cheyenne. She did a great job there. Carrie Bechet did a great job.
Yes.
I was shocked to find out that that was the girl from Scrubs. Actually, I've seen it a second time online. And being able to do that and look up on IMDb who these certain people were that looked familiar, but I hadn't quite placed as I watched it. Also, the one kid who was Impulse on Smallville. It was cool to see him. But,
You talking about Kevin Pollak?
No, I haven't talked about him yet.
Sorry, I was chasing the cat. I caught him, or her, rather.
It was a happy story.
It was. She lived.
Oh, okay.
Kevin Pollak is, he has only has a brief stint in the movie, but, his performance is always awesome. And great to see him in a serious kind of role. Always a great comedian. It was really cool to see the contrast. And he played well at John Goodman, who, was awesome in Roseanne for all those many years.
Mm-hmm. Dan Connor.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Which kind of leads on, again, not to spoil anything, but that, for some reason, brings up the point for me is, again, going back to the surprises in the film. I love that scene where one of the things I loved about the film, again, was Kevin Smith. He assumes that we've seen these movies before. He assumes that the tropes, I believe they're called, that the people that they stand by with these movies, then they use different tropes, again, I'll use the word. Even though I'm not quite sure what it means.
Well, I was going to say, what the hell's a trope?
A trope, it was... I'll have to look it up. But for the actual definition, it's like almost like a stereotype or a cliche or something. That's kind of what a trope is. I believe I could be wrong. Tweet in and let us know at 1-800, no, we're not live. So never mind.
We can always edit this out of post.
No, not at all. We need the stuff where I look like an idiot. Again, he assumes we've seen these movies, we know these things, so we see John Goodman and Kevin Pollak drive up to the film, we know, okay, this is the part where they make jokes, and then, this is the part where everything's going to be fine for a little while, and then certain things happen, and that shocks you out of your system. So you kind of come to expect that, shit's going down, basically, and this is, you don't know what's going to happen from one minute to the next. Stephen Root, I loved him. This is an amazing performance. I've been a big fan of his ever since News Radio. He was Jimmy James on News Radio.
Oh, yeah, the sheriff. He plays the sheriff.
Yeah. He did an amazing job. And again, watching it the second time and knowing what happens to the character, you appreciate it that much more. The fact that his dramatic performance, when I don't think it's giving away too much at the beginning, he breaks down at one point and he's crying. And I really believed it. He was very... very emotional in that one scene in particular. He did a great, great job.
He looked very upset.
And it's the one part where he stumbles back to his car. John Goodman I believe, grabs a rifle from him and just kills, get back to your car. And he stumbles and falls on his face, and it's very funny. I don't know if it was improv or if that was real or what, if he just did it, but it was a great little moment. Stuff like that. There's a lot of that stuff in the movie. The only sort of criticism I might have...
You have criticism about this movie?
I might.
This has never crept up in a conversation before.
I might. Yes, it has. I mentioned this before when I told you initially.
Oh, yeah, it is. My major problem with the movie.
Yes, that's... So yeah. If you want to take the lead, then...
Sure, I'll take the lead on this one.
Don't sound too critical.
You are. Yeah, that wouldn't be too critical. Basically, I mean, it's... I understand the effect of monologues and how they can be well used. There is one scene in particular, I wish I clocked it now, but it was really long. Where
15 minutes or 12 minutes or something.
It was something like that. Where it was Avon Cooper, is that his name?
Avon Cooper.
Yeah, Michael Parks' character. Preaching, and he preaches for a long time. It felt like going to church. felt like a sermon. So it was a little bit of a long scene, and it kind of dragged a little bit, I found, but I understand that he was talking about powerful stuff, and it's kind of the setup for what happens within, you know, the next 40 minutes following that, but that kind of jarred me a little bit.
Cat's back.
Is the cat back? Really?
Oh, yeah,
cat's
over here. Yeah, I had similar feelings when I remember watching Inglourious Basterds in the theater, and...
Yes!
And sitting there, it wasn't so much the opening scene. Some people might have no problem with the opening scene of Inglourious Basterds, just to go off on a other tirade here. But I love the opening scene. It was the scene in the bar, actually, when they're all sitting there and the Germans are there and they're meeting up with their contact. That scene, to me, always felt really long and almost like it... I don't know, who am I to say about Tarantino, but that's what my feelings were. It was a little bit long and needed to be tightened up just a little bit. I kind of felt the same way. There was actually a couple different scenes. I actually didn't mind the sermon. I'm doing this alone, apparently. Oh, you did the cat.
I'm back. The cat's gone again.
All right, for now. There's no kid gate or anything around here, so a cat will be back, probably.
The cat's back.
The cat's back.
Yes. Cat if there's background noise, we apologize.
The cat came back.
There's nothing we do with this cat, unfortunately.
He would not stay away, apparently. Mm. He likes making noise.
Someone should write a song about that.
Yeah, someone should. That'd be
make a
millions.
Cartoon or something.
Yeah. But also, well, the scene to me where it kind of stood out was this, not so much looking at it again, when the scene when John Goodman and the one guy are talking. We'll just put it that
What's
way.
What's his name?
He was...
Because he's in True Blood right now, too.
Yes. That's what... I looked him up, actually.
Thank
he's
you.
Not...
I don't think he's on my list.
Yeah, you'd have to go to the full list. Apparently, we're looking off IMDb, for those of us who are wondering what we're looking at. And you'd have to go to the full list. I had to go down and search for him specifically. Jose something or other.
Something like that.
Yeah, he's on True Blood. Yeah. He's on True Blood. So I figured, I know they're a fan, of Kevin Smith's a fan. I don't know, he might have just dumped to the casting agent, I don't know. But that one scene, not so much when I watched it the second time, but I remember sitting there in the theater and thinking, wow, there's gunshots going off and they're just talking. But in the theater, I didn't so much have a problem also with that one scene where in the bedroom, where the kids are talking. Again, mm-hmm. We'll just put it that way. And that went on. I remember thinking that at the time is like, okay, is that, you know, really how it would happen? Or these are all things, of course, you look at differently on a second viewing, a third viewing. But that's the only one scene that didn't ring true, watching it a second time, actually, was with the teacher at the very beginning. That one where she was explaining to the kids what was going on. And
that didn't work for you the second time around?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know why. It was just kind of weird. It was almost like Kevin Smith talking through this, the teacher. This is like just Kevin Smith's voice coming through this woman.
I see.
Whereas weird. With the rest of the film, it seemed totally original to me. Whereas with Michael Parks or John Goodman or Stephen Root or everything else to me was completely original. The kids, that one the scene is good in the sense that I guess you need exposition to explain what's going on or whatever, but that just the one scene with the teacher didn't, for whatever reason, seem very false to me. But I love the ending where the one line with the kid, he's like, what's the Second Amendment? That's where we get guns.
Which is the key theme for...
Yes. So there, of course, it wasn't a bad scene. It was just that one teacher with some of her monologuing was a little... strange to me, but again, I love the film and how it went on with different things, and again, how you didn't expect certain things to happen, and they did. Just being surprised as much, too. Mark Blucas just shows up out of nowhere, Riley from Buffy, and he's the one with the Carrie Bechet, the agent, who tackles her and puts her to the ground when they're talking.
That was him?
That's him.
That's Riley. I didn't pick up on that at all.
Yeah, that's him. Did a great job with that, I thought. Just a brief scene. But, Melissa Leo, I thought, was actually... she's excellent. She's always excellent. I remember her watching her on Homicide: Life in the Street years ago was my favorite TV show for a while there. She was the only girl on the show. She did a great job there. And coming off the Oscar, I guess she filmed it before the Oscars, but she's now an Oscar winner. She won last year for The Fighter.
She was the girlfriend?
No. Ralph Garman's wife. The daughter of Aidan Cooper.
No, I mean in The Fighter.
Oh, sorry. I was totally lost. The Fighter, Mark Wahlberg's mother.
Oh. Oh, of course. Yeah, that does make sense. Yeah. That's right. She wouldn't ask for that. I do remember now. Sorry.
Anyways. Yes. So did a great job. She's always great. Ralph Garman. I wish there was more of Ralph Garman, quite frankly.
Yeah, he made no secret that he's not in it very long, but what he is in it, and he's playing a mute, which is weird for that dude, because we're used to hearing him talk a lot.
Yes.
So it was weird that he was silent, because he played a mute character who didn't say a word.
But it's also very weird, I thought, seeing him mad all the time. He was always frowning, and he looking pissed off and angry, and because he's a bad guy. But it was very strange, I thought, to see Ralph Garman always pissed off and frowning.
And required to be sober, I imagine. Yeah. So that makes sense. Why he was so angry.
Maybe. Overall, I mean, loved the film. I think it's... I don't know if it's my favorite Kevin Smith film. My favorite would probably be Clerks 2. Love Clerks 2.
Still Jane Silent Bob Strike Back. It's my guilty pleasure. I love that movie.
All right, then.
Jersey Girl, close second, then Clerks 2.
See, that's funny how we have just totally different tastes on, well, many things.
Yeah, a ton of different things, but especially on those.
Chasing Amy was always my favorite.
I have fond memories of this. Clerks 2 might be it. I saw it on a date, I think, but other than that, I don't know. That one never really stuck with me either. Although Affleck's performance was really good. Mm-hmm. Which is saying something for Affleck, so. Do you want to talk about the distribution, the whole controversy with Wade?
I would love to, yes. Besides the actual movie itself, it's funny that the movie itself might actually take a back seat to the story of maybe historically what this movie represents.
Yeah.
How it's self-distributing, or how they are self-distributing this film under their Smodcast Films label. What, the kitty?
The cat
is fighting with the garbage, apparently. I think the cat needs to be put in the credits. Apparently the cat has found a plastic bag. Anyways, for those of you not familiar, I'll try to be brief with this. Kevin Smith made this film for about $4 million with various investors, and then at Sundance decided he would be his own distributor. So he's able to go out. He's been famous for years for going out on college campuses, doing Q&As, now with the Smodcast Network doing Q&As, traveling around. So he decided to do that with this film, Red State. And already, we're recording this in September now, beginning of September.
Yeah.
It's already made its money back, apparently, through distribution in North America and Europe, or I guess Canada, Europe. Video on demand sales. Cat's back again, I think. So, anyways, it's amazing, this story.
Hey, here he is. Hi. God damn, I'm going to kill that creature. I'm not going to kill the cat. I'm going to hurt it.
The address is, you want to come save this cat?
Yeah, if anyone wants to save the cat, call now.
Should we have missed, like, the death of Robin? 1-800 number. Should the cat live or die?
That's right.
That's what we should do.
Call in if you want to weigh in on this subject.
Batman. Do you want happy Batman or do you want sad Batman? Which is it?
You want live cat or dead cat?
He's very cute, for those of you who can't see, because this is not video.
She's adorable and apparently wanted to be a part of this moment.
Apparently, yes. His cat wants... Was it Harlequin?
Harlequin is the name of the cat, yeah.
No red at all. I think you should give him, like, a red bow around the neck or something.
Something.
Anyways, so this film is making history, the way they've decided to self-distribute. And, of course, if you look online, there's people saying yay or nay. Mostly people just want to be negative because it's online. You can do that. But I think it's a huge thing, this film, what it's accomplishing.
Well, yeah, I mean, you went to one of the screenings, and one of the big advantages of a screening is that there's a Q&A with Kevin Smith afterwards. So, I mean, that's an amazing way to distribute it, because even if the film sucked ass, I mean, at least you still get to see Kevin Smith and do his, like, 3-hour-long Q&A thing at the end of it. So, I mean, that's...
That is a bit of an advantage, yeah. It's more of a dog and pony show. I mean, it's a traveling circus. I mean, that kind of thing, that he's even described it that way, I believe. That's how they're... It's a traveling road show, how they're going around, and they're also not just distributing the film again, they're distributing Kevin Smith. And he's going to, again, places like Iceland, I believe. They're headed out to soon to go to screen the film and doing stuff like that. So it is, I know we've talked about how this is revolutionary, but also you were saying that how only he could do this. Is that, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
yeah,
I believe that's sort of what your gist was.
I remember there was a whole indie film scene was rocked by him doing a self-distribution, and then all of a sudden he decided that he was going to distribute more films, I think it was announced. And I think that was kind of premature, because then I think all those independent filmmakers who had films sitting around forever all suddenly found a way, oh, we can distribute through Kevin Smith. But I mean, he made it clear that he really wanted to be like the last option for people to do that kind of thing. And the fact is, I mean, not everybody can do it the way he did it. Developing a following like his has taken him since Clerks, which is what year?
94.
So since 94, he's been building this following, which has got bigger and bigger with social media and Twitter and that kind of thing, and now he's huge, but he already has a following. He has a podcast network. He has all this stuff going on for him, so yeah, he can do it like this. Some Joe Schmo off the street who might shoot a great movie isn't going to have the same kind of pull, so that's my opinion. Not saying you shouldn't try it, but must be down or anything, but he can do it because he has that such a strong following.
I agree for, I guess, the most part. It would be hard for, I know Francis Ford Coppola is out, has now followed suit, and he's going to be going on the road with his new movie. And I don't know, though, but the thing is, too, with Kevin Smith, he was willing to talk about himself. He wants to talk about, he loves talking. Clearly, he has, like, what, 6 hours a day,
oh,
or 4 hours
yeah.
a day of,
he can talk
of podcasts, and he talks a lot, so I don't know, but the thing about Francis Ford Coppola is one thing I would imagine, if he's going to a show and he wants to talk about this movie that he's showing, whatever it is, I don't even know the name of it, the new one coming up, everyone's going to ask him about Apocalypse Now or Godfather, whereas Kevin Smith has no problem if someone stands in line for an hour and wants to ask him about Jersey Girl or something like that.
Or his dog.
Or his dog.
Anything, really.
Or having sex with his wife, or whatever the case may be, he's fine with that. So again, the whole traveling roadshow aspect of it, I don't know how other filmmakers, how they would react to that, or even how they would be in front of a crowd. I mean...
Yeah, public speaking, I mean, you and I can attest to this. Our jobs, we go a job still, and my job did include public speaking for several years. And coming from a point of view where we both did not do any public speaking prior to that, it's not an easy thing to do, and not everybody can do it. It's definitely a tricky thing to learn, and it's even harder to get good at it, but I mean, he has a very natural gift to the gab to be able to just talk and talk and talk, but not everybody can do that.
It's also very empowering. It's great to see a guy like Kevin, and again, in his own words, he said this, you know, if a guy like him can do it, then so can you. So if that's very empowering, when I went to LA in April, and not bragging or anything.
Yeah, you're bragging.
I went to LA
Jackass.
In April and saw Smodcast and Babylon and those guys in person at the John Lovitz Theater, and just seeing him and talking to him. And again, after I saw the screening that I did and watching him talk about it, he even addressed that at the screening, talking about how anyone can do this. It's bullshit, basically, if someone says you can't do this. So it's you go there very inspired, and you want to, let's go, you know, kick some ass and make a movie or whatever. But then you come back to reality and say, well, I don't know if I can make a movie, that kind of thing. So it's very empowering, and it's wonderful, that all hopeful sort of aspect of everything. But never mind, you know, us people here sitting at this table. But, I mean, if someone like, say, Paul Thomas Anderson or someone like that, or, I mean, Tarantino would be probably great at it. Robert Rodriguez would probably be really good at it, going and doing Q&As and stuff like that, but... It just depends, I would guess. It wouldn't be necessarily the same as Kevin Smith, obviously. He can talk for, you know, up to 8 hours at a time. I believe he did once one Q&A. So he's a blabbermouth in the best possible way.
Yeah.
Very entertaining.
In a positive way.
Yeah, very positive way.
He's funny. He makes us laugh.
Yes. Yeah. Many hours a day spent laughing at Kevin Smith, actually.
Yeah.
Again, in a good way.
Of course.
So it's, looking back at this, again, it would suck if it was a horrible movie, but it is a great movie. So, very very glad to see this happen. And even some of the people online who have been attacking him ever since, what, January, have been actually backing off a little bit and trying to give him some credit. So it's nice.
Then I have the trivia stuff for Red State, if you're interested.
Sure.
All right.
Trivia.
Did you ever find out about the whole shooting thing? About it being shot on Red Cam?
No, actually. No, this is not, this. You surprised me with this, and I didn't know about it. Yes, was it shot on Red Cam?
I don't know. I never looked into it. Oh. The IMDb trivia page says that this is the first feature Kevin Smith and his cinematographer David Klein will shoot using the all-digital Red Cam, which, of course, is a pretty popular camera these days, and maybe
depending on who
that's
you talk to.
Depending on who you talk to, yeah.
But it says will be using the Red Cam. Doesn't say.
Oh, it does say will she? Oh, so maybe they never
future
did.
Future tense, not past tense.
See, I never did my homework on this.
Oh,
I was supposed to verify this, and I didn't.
You dropped the ball there, sir.
I bet.
Between that and not being able to get rid of the cat, I mean, really.
The cat's gone. Do you see the cat here anymore?
Well,
you
just got
the cat's right there. Sorry, cat is still here. Just stop.
He's tearing shit apart.
He's like Caesar in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. He's just staring.
He's just waiting for his moment.
I think he's waiting for us to have sex.
We're not going to. That inappropriate podcast. It wouldn't work.
Yeah, this is all ages.
Yeah.
Of geeks, apparently.
Yeah.
I find this interesting.
Budget for the special effects for Red State was $5,000.
Yes. And I can go into detail, actually, if you
Oh, you know, this part.
I know, because, I listen to Smodcasts and podcasts, and I know all this stuff. Apparently, he wanted some sort of, the one scene, try not to give away too much, but where the guy's on the cross, and they unveil him or whatever, take the sheet off him, and
yeah,
he's bubble wrapped or whatever, saran wrapped.
Yeah.
He wanted him to have a goat's head. Or maybe this is an anecdote, I don't know if this is detailed, but
okay.
So we went to the props guy and said, I wanted like a goat's head for there was some movie horror film that the victim had a goat's head or something like that. So the guy's like, okay, I'll get back to you. So then he calls it back and said, actually, that's gonna be like $5,000. And so Kevin Smith's like, okay, that's our whole budget. It's $5,000 for special effects and props and stuff like that. So he's like, oh, we can't have that then.
It's $5,000 for a goat's head?
Apparently. Or I think he was like a goat's head. Oh, no, I missed out a part. Goat's head too small for that. So he must have meant a ram's head. He's like, ram's head. Yeah, that's it, ram's head.
A ram's head's $5,000?
Well, yes, apparently a ram's head is $5,000.
How much does a full ram cost?
But again, that goes to the bigger point of how much it takes to make a movie in Hollywood, apparently.
If a ram's head's $5,000, I don't know how they ever produce anything.
Could just sneak onto someone's ranch and just take one. But, you know, of course, it's $5,000. So I remember that. That's what triggered that sort of thing in my head about there would be only $5,000. Because there would have been just $5,000 and they would have had, or, you know, would have just had a ram's head. But no guns and no shots and no blood and anything like that. So
they
had to trade one for
that.
The other. They kind of had to trade one for the other.
Yeah.
But it's weird, though. I didn't know anything about the Red Cam. Again, we soak up so much information. And I wouldn't have heard of Red Cam because I've had
experience with Red Cam before.
Yeah.
I like the director cameo piece. Smith has a quick off-camera cameo at the end of the film as the prison inmate yelling the last line in the film.
Oh, okay.
Did you know that?
No.
Ah, see?
I did know that.
Look at that.
Well, I was going to say that makes no sense. Off-camera cameo?
Yeah, it was
off-camera cameo. That kind of is a contradiction, isn't it?
And if you see the movie and you see what the last line is, then it kind of makes sense.
It's a great last line.
Yeah, it is a great last
line.
Wonderful. Beautiful closing.
Mm-hmm. I saw someone tweet to him the other day. It was like, would have paid to see that headbutt.
Yeah.
Which, again, someone who has seen the movie will know what that means.
Yes, I would have been wicked to see it. Because by that point, you really want to see the dude in question get headbutted.
Yeah. So. But that was that amazing scene to me, is when that whole thing starts. With the horn or
the
trumpets. Again, I'm not saying what the trumpets are, but just the trumpets. That was an amazing... Again, seeing the film in the theater with all these people, there was like a... There was like tension in the room. I was like, holy shit, what's happening right now?
Yeah, it was.
So it was almost like it was going to take that next step to like a almost supernatural thing. But then when you don't know what's going on because it's a movie, right?
Yes.
You might think the rapture's happening or like it's that moment where you're like, oh shit, something's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really a great moment where you're just like, wow.
Yeah, it was really good. It was because it really did confuse you. You thought all of a sudden. And in the back of my mind, I was like, oh my god, he's not going to go there, is he? He's done this beautiful lift till now, and he's going to do this weird switch. And
little Alanis Morissette's going to show up?
Yeah, Alanis Morissette's going to go show up and play God, and Alan Rickman's going to be talking for her. And...
It'd be so good. Love, by the way.
Yeah, that's
love
true.
A little Rickman here and there. Come on.
Yeah, come on, Rickman.
Anytime you know,
why wasn't he in the movie, actually? Wasn't he supposed to be in the movie at some point?
No, he's going
to
be in Hit Somebody.
Oh, yeah, he's going to be in Hit Somebody. That's right. As Lord Stanley.
Yeah. And Billy Ray. Who's Billy Ray? He's going to be the star of Hit Somebody. The big, tall kid with the rat's
tail. Really?
Yeah.
The goofy kid?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I could see that. He looks like a hockey player.
Yeah, he's a big kid.
Yeah, he's a huge kid.
But I liked him, and again, watching it a second time online, it was like you appreciated him more because he's had this like intensity, like we're gonna get some.
Yeah,
like,
he's really happy about the whole concept.
And he was actually the one that was like, okay, let's go, let's get into this bedroom, and let's get our clothes up. So he had this funny intensity to him that you didn't expect before. And the other kid, you know who the other kid is?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, did you ever see Forbidden Kingdom? The movie, I think, was with Jackie Chan and
Jackie
together. He was the kid.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
Nicholas Braun, is that him? I think that's him.
Oh, well, yeah, I could see that. I love Forbidden Kingdom.
Okay.
Just for Jet Li and never seen it. Jackie Chan fighting each other. Okay. Was classic. Anyways.
I could be wrong. Again.
Although, it might also not be that kid. It could be someone totally different.
Yeah, it could be. I believe I saw that on IMDb. You might just want the kid in the background.
We'll try a bit of homework next time.
Not really.
No, we won't.
That's really, you shouldn't get your expectations up.
Very low expectations for this
podcast. Really shouldn't.
Yeah. So basically, that wraps up our review for Red State, I think. We tried our best not to actually tell you anything about the movie, as far as plot's concerned. So you should.
We went on for about 20 minutes of telling you nothing.
Yes.
That's what we did, actually.
It's like an episode of Seinfeld, is what this was. So you should go and see it, because it is really good. And you can get it on direct TV.
Video on demand. Yep. On various places, and it will be on DVD at some point, and Blu-ray.
And if you're like torrent inclined, I'm sure you can find it on the internet somewhere if you really want to. But I encourage you to give your money to Kevin Smith. So.
Yes. And depending on where you are, I'm on the 28th, I believe. Again, we should have done our homework here. But on the 28th, they're having one night screenings of like all these big places. I was going to tell you this if you didn't know this already.
I don't know what you're talking about.
They're showing Red State and doing a live. Like Babylon or something like that, streaming live to all the theaters around like North America.
Really?
Yeah, a whole bunch of theaters in Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, Toronto, then all over the states too.
That's crazy. I know.
One night only in the theater. So I was going to tell you that you should head down there. I think Richmond is the closest one, or Langley, or one of those places down there.
Really? That might be worth tripping.
Maybe the Colossus or something. I'm not sure.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, so with our whole trilogy thing in mind, we're going to move on to our second piece, which we're going to do the movie news or whatever, entertainment news. Or
you don't know?
Did you bring any news?
This went better in rehearsal.
Yes, we. In our minds, it worked so well.
Yes, but I was thinking of this on the way here. This went so much better. Well, I've got the comic book stuff ready to go.
Okay, well, in that case, I picked out some. Just stuff from the last week, basically, that we found out about. And you want to talk about the Lucas thing?
Yeah.
Okay. You want to talk about that first?
Sure.
All right. Go ahead. Tell them what this is all about.
George Lucas is a crazy, crazy man. He has built himself a legacy, and he seems determined to take it down brick by brick.
But he's rich. He can do whatever the hell he wants.
He can do whatever he wants.
So rich.
I was intrigued by an article on the AV Club this week, talking about George Lucas. Of course, it's been in the news lately. For those of you who don't know, again, if you're listening to this, I don't know why you wouldn't know. But anyways, or maybe it's just me. What he's doing is making yet more alterations to the classic Star Wars. I don't really care if he does anything to the prequels, because screw them. But
they could stand improvement, really.
Well, he could take out, you know, Jar Jar or whatever. I wouldn't really mind. But the original trilogy, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, he keeps tinkering with them for some forsaken reason. I don't know why he does this, but he seems determined to do it. He's the latest one is that he's put in with Vader at the end when he's struggling whether or not he should help Luke when he's being electrified by the Emperor with lightning bolts coming out of his fingers. He's got that face where he looks at the Emperor and he looks at Luke, and then he obviously he throws the Emperor over the.
Don't spoil anything for the movie, but
well, who hasn't seen Return of the Jedi at this point? Seriously, people, come on now.
My wife has never seen Star Wars.
Well, that's your wife.
Yeah, that's sick.
Your wife isn't going to listen to this.
No, probably not.
The cat is probably more interested in this podcast than your.
That's
wife.
Why she's still here listening to it.
Yeah, but she's
just curled up today.
Anyways, so spoiler.
the Emperor dies near the end of Return of the Jedi. No. But so instead of it just being a silence, you know, looking back and forth, stoic even, now he's like, no.
Well, that's such a solid scene, too, because it was really, I mean, Vader's a badass all the way through, and he's so calm all the way through, even when, you know, everything goes really bad at the end of Star Wars. He just looks, sees it all go down, and then...
Empire.
Oh, sorry, it was Empire.
Yeah, right? when they take off, and the Millennium Falcon kicks in the hyperdrive, and they take off, he stands there, he looks,
everything,
and he looks back.
He just lost their main piece of the rebellion. He just watches them, and then he turns
and everyone on the
away.
Everyone on the Star Destroyer is like, oh, shit.
Yeah, because they think he's going to lose his shit. And he doesn't. He just walks away.
Just
he's
walks
cool
away.
And calculated.
Yeah.
And then what he's done now is just fucked it all up by just turning him into the big wuss that he is at the end of the
he's
new
Hayden,
trilogy.
Now he's actually Hayden Christensen.
Now he's Hayden Christensen.
He's actually being... They actually filmed new scenes with Hayden Christensen under the mask for some reason, because he had to be a whiny little bitch.
At least but, space's biggest badass just turns
apparently
into the emo whiner.
So the theory is online. Of course, it's online, so who cares? But it's on. The theory is that he wanted to bookend it with the end of... What was it? Horrible third one, the Revenge of the Sith or whatever.
Yeah.
When he becomes Vader and he goes, no! And he freaks out and smashes everything, all the beakers or whatever. When he's finally in the Vader suit,
yeah,
he freaks out. That's apparently the motivation behind this. But it's just one more thing in the long line of George Lucas tinkering. I mean, it's one thing to take out whole scenes or whatever, but the fact that he tinkers, it just drives me kind of even more infuriates me. The fact that he changes audio in certain scenes and just those little things like that. Well, I mean, the whole thing with Greedo and from the original ones, or Han shot first, Greedo shot first, whatever the debate was, that was just stupid. But it's weird to me that he thinks that he has to do this to keep. I don't know George Lucas personally. I should probably state that. I don't, actually. Believe it or not, I feel like I do. But I don't know him, but it's weird, almost like he has this low self-esteem or something that has to keep doing these things to keep in the news. I can't imagine he's sitting there on his throne of gold up at Lucasfilm or whatever his ranch is called.
Skywalker
yeah. Where Kevin Smith got married.
There you go. Look at that.
Throwback.
Nice. Everything in. How nice.
But on his throne of gold, or having his milk bath in his gold, you know, bathtub, whatever he does.
He bathes in milk.
I have no idea. That was just a theory.
You're assuming.
I was totally assuming. And it's not good to assume. What he's doing, that he does he not think that just putting Star Wars on Blu-ray will sell items? Does he have to actually think he has to do things like this to sell things and get on people tweeting about it? He's not DC Comics. He doesn't need to scare people with marketing and freak people out to get people's attention, I don't think. We'll get to that later. But George Lucas, I think, is okay. He's a billionaire at this point already, and he wants more money, apparently. I don't know what the deal is, why he thinks he has to tinker. But that's the backstory. This is the AV Club. I saw this argument, or this article, about George Lucas. That was by Sean O'Neill. Give credit there. The title of it's called George Lucas Offers a Compelling Argument Against George Lucas. So basically what the article is about, back in 1988, George Lucas actually went and testified to Congress. And this is funny that there was actually congressional hearings about this. I don't know if you remember back when Ted Turner was colorizing movies. He was going to colorize the Maltese Falcon and all these different black and white films because they were starting up, or going to start up TCM. Or this was before TCM, when they had TNT. They were USA or whatever, and they were going to put these colorized movies because they wanted ratings. Hmm. They wanted to do this and colorize these movies. It was a big controversy.
Okay.
I remember it being a controversy. I don't remember there being congressional hearings, but apparently there were back in 1988, and George Lucas testified against this, because he thought this was a horrible thing that should not be done to film.
So he's a hypocrite, you're saying.
Well, here we go. I'll actually read his quotes. Of course, these are abbreviated quotes. I didn't actually bring forth the testimony, because frankly, it's better to do this. Have someone else do your work for you. The rebel filmmaker stood before Congress in 1988 and argued that the madness must stop. People who alter or destroy works of art and our cultural heritage for profit or as an exercise of power are barbarians. And if the laws of the United States continue to condone this behavior, history will surely classify us as a barbaric society. This was
quite eloquent for someone made Star Wars.
His classification of Barbaric, I mean, is a little off.
Yes, he sounds like Emperor Palpatine in the chambers. These current defacements are just the beginning. Today, engineers with their computers can add color to black and white movies, change the soundtrack, speed up the pace, and add or subtract material to the philosophical tastes of the copyright holder. Did I say that? Yeah, okay. Tomorrow, more advanced technology will be able to replace actors with fresher faces,
what?
Alter dialogue, and change the movement of the actor's lips to match. It will soon be possible to create a new original negative with whatever changes or alterations the copyright holder of the moment desires. This is George Lucas saying this. So, I think it's quite ironic.
Spot calling the kettle black.
Yeah. In the future, it will become even easier for old negatives to become lost and be replaced by new altered negatives. This would be great loss to our society, etc., etc. Let's go on from there. But it does seem to be that George Lucas is warning people about the future George Lucas. It's like we needed to take a DeLorean back in time and get it up to 88 miles per hour to take it back to 1988 and go introduce him to old George Lucas.
Nice genre reference.
Yes, I know. Thank you. I worked hard on it. But our cultural history must not be allowed to be rewritten.
That's hilarious.
Yes, so I found that interesting.
That is a little weird that back in the 80s he was so against it, and now in 2011 he just loves to tinker with shit.
Yes, but I guess the argument could then be on his part, or someone, one of his minions, who wanted to come forward and talk for him, because he's too busy to talk, apparently, is that it's his movie, as opposed to Ted Turner wanting to colorize the Maltese Falcon or something like that.
He wanted to do
like
it to other movies, and Lucas can do whatever he wants because it's his movie, and he's allowed to do whatever he wants to do with his movie.
Exactly.
That kind of makes sense.
But then I can offer the counter-argument. Oh, apparently I'm arguing with myself here.
Don't keep arguing.
But he only directed Star Wars.
That's true. So he would be messing with the dude who just did it.
Erwin Kirshner.
Yeah.
He would actually... He is the one who directed The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, so it's actually he's altering Erwin Kirshner's work.
But he's dead, so not like he can argue against it now.
Yeah, but he started this a while ago, so it wasn't, it's not like he started this yesterday. I believe it was 1997.
So you're trying to say that he killed Erwin Kirshner so that he could make these changes.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh my god.
That's where this is all going.
This is a conspiracy theory. Where's Ivan? We need to...
We need to get him. We need to get this George Lucas before he hurts somebody.
Obviously.
Obviously he did already. But that's sort of, I thought that was interesting, how that sort of all comes full circle.
That is weird.
Yeah, so... And an interesting art from the AV Club, something that's a website I go to all the time. So they're always pretty good about that stuff. So
they're cool.
Yeah. What do you got?
Just small news, really, bits and pieces. Wolverine 2, which has been stuck in development hell for a couple years now, since they greenlit it to go ahead. They've rewritten it and rewritten it and rewritten it.
Because we really need another Wolverine movie.
We do need another. You didn't like the first Wolverine movie, did you?
Shit.
Did you not like it because it messed with the continuity, or you just didn't like it because it was just like...
give a shit about Wolverine's continuity. The X-Men lost me a long
Chris
time ago.
Chris is very much against Wolverine, apparently.
I'm a DC guy.
Oh, that's true.
Well, at least I was. Fair enough. Up until this past summer, but...
Yeah, well, then we'll get to that.
But yeah, we saw that one, again, from, I think, the AV Club about the animation thing about the continuity errors.
Yeah, the continuity errors. There's so many continuity errors between X-Men 1, 2, and 3, and then First Class, and then Wolverine. Wolverine being the worst one of the lot, that it just totally just fucked the entire timeline, as if nothing else ever happened, or they just decided that, you know...
But it was funny, the things I didn't even notice. Parts. I didn't even notice certain things until they pointed it out. I only really thought of the Mystique thing. Mystique and Xavier were like brother
class.
And sister in First Class, and they didn't even... Yeah. Anyways, so go ahead.
Well, apparently there's still any issues with getting Wolverine 2 off the ground because they just can't get it together. They lost Darren
Aronofsky
was attached as the director, and then he won an Oscar for Black Swan, decided he didn't need to do anything cheap and crappy like Wolverine, so he left. And then
big words in his mouth, sir.
No, he told me that.
Oh, did he?
Personally, me and Darren like
after
that. You're so close.
You're on the one line with Lucas, and then the call waiting. Like, hey, it's Aronofsky.
Yeah, we talk all the time.
Yeah.
It's best friends. But now they're calling Mark Baumbach in to rewrite it, and he has done a lot of stuff like Jack the Giant Killer. He's also done Total Recall, Unstoppable, Race to Witch Mountain, Live Free or Die Hard.
The new Total Recall, though, right?
I believe it's referring to the new Total Recall. I can't imagine he just had the one.
Again, who gives a shit?
Apparently nobody.
No, it's about the Total Recall is what I'm talking about.
Oh, I see.
Not your article.
That's true. The Total Recall thing is ridiculous. Colin Farrell. I mean, that doesn't...
Come on.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Anyway, the point is, Wolverine 2, not going anywhere fast.
Not that I would, you know...
Not that Chris is going to see it anyway,
a movie
obviously.
Before it even came out. I would never do that. Because I always give people a fair shake.
It's a Doom prediction. That's what you're doing. You don't think it's going to go anywhere.
I love the original.
Wolverine?
Total Recall.
Okay.
We're still talking about Total Recall.
Sorry, right? Total Recall. Yes, I love
Again, who cares about Wolverine?
No one, apparently. I won't mention it again
ever. I would be interested
in
if they did... What is it? They're supposed to be go to Japan or something?
They are supposed to go to Japan. That's still the deal, I think.
Yeah.
Is to do his whole samurai... Which I actually don't know anything about the storyline.
Yeah. Well, I was interested in Wolverine just because they brought in so many other X-Men and guys like was Gambit.
Yeah, but messed it up again. I mean, even Gambit, it didn't make sense. Again, that was a timeline thing. Mm-hmm. Why is Gambit so, you know, he's that age there, but he's still supposed to be, you know, a certain age when he joins the X-Men, and it doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
But yeah, it's like the whole Smallville thing. Like, as we're watching, it's like, how are they going to...
just trying to get into Smallville.
Totally cutting you off here every time you try to...
That's an episode all on its own.
But that was the thing, but towards the end, we were always like, okay, how are they going to make Lois forget? And how are they going to do this? And how are they going to make it work with the Superman mythos? But that's, like, with Wolverine, they're like, okay, he doesn't know these people that he knows now, apparently. Mm-hmm. How's that going to work with leading up to chronologically? Apparently, they don't give a shit.
It won't. There's going to be no chronology. Like, since Marvel doesn't own the movie rights to those, then that's kind of why... Was it Sony? Or Fox? It's Fox.
Yeah.
Fox owns rights and they obviously don't give a crap.
Right.
Moving on to other crappy stuff. Beetlejuice sequel developing.
Again, going back to Kevin Smith. Is this Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian?
No, this isn't. Although that was the script that came out way back.
Frankly, I want to see that movie.
In the 90s. Who wouldn't want to see Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian? No, this was...
Except Beetlejuice on Lost. That would have been hilarious.
Beetlejuice on Lost?
Because it was on Hawaii.
Was it?
It was filmed
in
Hawaii.
I never saw Lost.
It was filmed in Hawaii.
I just know they were stuck on an island for a long time.
It was Hawaii. They just didn't turn the corner.
They were real lost.
Yeah. If they'd gone around the corner, there was like hotels and stuff.
You know, GPS or something. I mean,
apparently
they could have solved the problem really
well.
Anyway, they're making a sequel to Beetlejuice. It's untitled. But it's been written by Seth Graham Smith, who just wrote Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. So he sounds well qualified for a Beetlejuice sequel.
Sounds like a winner.
Yeah. They want Tim Burton back for it, but Tim Burton's uncertain, and Michael Keaton, although he's expressed interest in coming in doing Beetlejuice again, I'm pretty sure that was about 16, 17 years ago. So I don't know if he'd be as up for that.
Well, Michael Keaton would rock.
He would, because that was, I mean, the original was awesome. I love the original Beetlejuice.
He's due for a comeback.
He needs to. What is he doing lately?
I have not seen it. He did a baseball movie a while ago. I think that's the last thing I've seen him in.
I saw him in Herbie Fully Loaded with Lindsay Lohan.
Well, that's the thing. I have not seen Herbie Fully Loaded. But
you have not lived, sir.
I didn't even see him in the trailer, so that's surprising to me. The last thing I remember seeing him in a really good movie was Live from Baghdad. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Okay. It's good.
What's it about?
They were in Baghdad.
Oh.
Was it live? They were live.
Interesting.
It was the story of how CNN covered the first Gulf War. It was Helena Bonham Carter and a really good cast. I think
was it directed by Tim Burton?
No. I think it was an HBO movie.
But Helena Bonham Carter was in it?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Shocking.
That is shocking.
Almost like a Johnny Depp movie, not directed by Tim Burton.
Tim Burton, yeah. That'd be weird.
Or Rob Marshall or whoever else that guy is.
Gore Verbinski,
yeah.
Loves those guys. Eddie Murphy. What are your thoughts on Eddie Murphy, Chris?
I love Eddie Murphy.
Do you?
Yes. I wish him well.
Well, he's hosting the 84th Academy Awards.
If he's listening, I wish Eddie Murphy well.
Are you scared of him or something? No. Is that what this is about?
No, that's legitimate. I feel bad for Eddie Murphy that he keeps picking these horrible movies. What? Like Norbit and like all this crap, Pluto Nash. I wish he could do well.
For example?
Yeah. Eddie Murphy was the man in like the 80s when I was growing up. He's my favorite actor when I grew up. Growing up.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the Beverly Hills Cop, which was 1982 or around there. It was early 80s.
Come to America.
Come to America with Arsenio Hall is an awesome movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, back then he was the shit, and these days, not so much. It kind of started with a downward slide with Vampire in Brooklyn, and then everything else after that was really bad.
Yeah, I think he far outweighs his bad movies versus good ratio, but Bowfinger will always be a classic to me. I love Bowfinger.
I don't mind, it was okay.
You're crazy. Him and Steve Martin together was a wonderful combination. I love that movie. But it's weird, too, because Eddie Murphy, every once in a while,
we'll have a good movie like, or have a successful movie. I don't know if you want to put it.
Night Professor was good. It was funny. It made use of his comedic talents. And Shrek, of course, he's done the voice for Donkey forever.
Donkey, a classic. Love Donkey. But there's like Dreamgirls.
Which he was nominated for an Oscar.
He was nominated for an Oscar. Yeah. Which actually, they had a story about that on. Today I listened to Jay Moore's podcast. He interviewed Eric Roberts for 2 hours.
Oh, really?
Very interesting. And they actually referenced Eddie Murphy and Dreamgirls and all that.
Weird, I had no idea.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very funny. Cool. You can find that out for yourself.
Okay. Go to smodcast.com.
Yes, because they need the plugs.
They need the help, not us. I mean, we're fine with this one-off podcaster, but yeah. I mean, he did really good in the early 80s. He did a lot of stand-up, which he was kind of what he was famous for the longest time.
Delirious and Raw, wasn't it?
Eddie Murphy, comedian, and then Eddie Murphy, Delirious, after were huge. They did tons. They grossed over $50 million on home market. Or, sorry, Raw. It was made $50 million.
Is there a reason you're bringing this up?
Yeah, he's hosting the 84.
Did you bring it up?
I already brought it up, and you just passed it right over. He's hosting the 84th Academy Awards.
I wasn't listening. I was waiting to talk.
You were basking in Eddie Murphy glory, apparently. Yes, he's hosting the Oscars this year, which is amazing. Because, you know, they keep trying to revamp it, and last year was a horrible failure with Hathaway and Franco. So they're trying to do something different. They're putting a black guy up there instead. they've never done that.
What is that going to do?
Because
as opposed to Whoopi Goldberg, Whoopi Goldberg hosted.
Oh yeah,
my black bad. Woman.
It was a black woman. It's different.
That's
it's a black man this time. I'm not racist.
The cat's black that he's been chasing. By the way,
I have a black cat.
So. I don't think it's a coincidence, but whatever. I'm not casting dispersions. I'm just flat out saying them. The Academy Awards is like so.
Well, you don't
stupid.
Like the Academy Awards, right? I mean,
I don't watch the Academy Awards. I listen to them, I want to know what's happening. I do like on IMDb or Ain't It Cool or whatever when they have it on the front page. Yeah. They say who's winning and who's won the latest awards. I pay attention to that. I don't actually watch the Oscars. I don't watch any award shows. I think they're kind of dumb, frankly.
He's a snob. That's all.
Yes, that's what it is. I'm a snob.
Yeah.
But the Oscars, for me, it's like they want it both ways. They want to be classy, but then they want the young kids to watch.
You
can't have both. They want, if you want the young kids to watch, you have to become the MTV Movie Awards, where their best picture is a fight between Transformers 2 and Twilight and whatever else crappy movie is playing.
Really, you just need to add Twilight.
Yes, really.
If you just add Twilight to the Oscars, then you've got a winner, kids will watch it.
In which they think, like last year, they tried to pander to the kids, so I think they had the Twilight kids present an award. Mm-hmm. Like, the kids are going to watch the 3-hour, 4-hour Oscar ceremony for one glimpse of their... They know they're being pandered to.
Yeah.
They're smarter than that. So they're not going to watch. They'll watch clips online or whatever, YouTube afterwards.
But you think they're going to watch Eddie Murphy?
No, but I'm saying this is my... What I'm getting to is
this. You bring the lead here, sir. Come on.
No, I'm...
Spit that.
This is a podcast, sir. We have to talk. This is what... I didn't think I'd have to explain this to you.
You do.
This is just
we're 3 minutes in. You need to explain this to me.
But luckily, this is just the rehearsal.
Thank goodness. No, this is it.
We're actually recording?
Yeah, this is
how about that? I hope so, because I'm not saying this all again. What I'm saying is what... They can't have it both ways. So they either have to be the Oscars, which is what it's always been, and be classy, and have someone... What they think they're doing is Eddie Murphy's kind of in between, I guess. I don't know. Maybe the kids like him because of Shrek and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
maybe
that makes sense.
Someone went and saw Norbit. I don't know. But maybe that's what they're trying to do. I know that one year they had Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin. They did a pretty good job, I thought. But then, of course, they're old. So that's... And then they did the complete opposite last year with Hathaway and Franco, and that sucked up. Big banana. So, putting it nicely. So, again, from what I understand.
Yeah, because you didn't watch it.
I actually watched
the
show. You told me about
it. They did suck. They were
it's pretty much the
awful.
Consensus, I believe. Or at least, or people said at least Anne Hathaway tried, which
she
attempted, had nothing.
And Franco was there for the paycheck.
Couldn't care less.
Yeah.
So, that's what the consensus was, it seems. So.
I think it's good. I think it's a good call. I think Eddie Murphy would be funny. I mean,
I might actually watch if Eddie Murphy
good
is.
Good God, really?
I might actually watch. Wow. But it's still 4 hours of just them.
It is
whacking
not.
Each other off.
Lots of commercials.
I mean, if they really wanted to make it, you know, an award show that people will sit there and watch, and I hate to say this, and I apologize, but they'd have to get rid of stuff like Doc documentary short, and, you know, like, that kind of stuff.
Best that, foreign film that no one cares about.
That, I mean, well, even, like, best foreign film, that at least that's, like, the best of the rest of the world, not Hollywood. Yeah. So that, I could see maybe that, but they need to have best actor, obviously, best actress, best supporting, best screenplay, best director, best picture, maybe something like, again, foreign film. But the little stuff, I mean, even best cinematography, best editing, best sound editing, mm-hmm. like, the really hardcore stuff. I mean, if they wanted to get it down to a reasonable time and they wanted to have more people not say, oh my God, it's the Oscars, it's a 4-hour commitment or whatever, mm-hmm. that's what they'd have to do. And if it has to be one or the other. And they have to have a host who knows what they're doing, which I think is a good step with Eddie Murphy. They were, the last thing they were talking about was bringing back Billy Crystal, which,
it's fine. He's fine. He doesn't appeal to a younger generation.
He's done it, and you know, I'd prefer a new face. I think Eddie Murphy will do a great job. So that's something, I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, doing the with the, what the Golden Globes did and the Hollywood Foreign Press did, put in Gervais on there 2 years in a row, they found out that even though he caused mass controversy,
it was huge.
And
it was funny as hell.
Oh, it was hilarious. And you know, he did something better. I mean, the Oscars, the Golden Globes, all about honoring actors and them, like you say, whacking each other up. So, I mean, it was very nice that Gervais made them not be too serious about themselves because they had no choice. They had to listen to him.
Yeah.
And he was funny. He was great. So, I mean,
I think the funniest thing I heard the day after the Golden Globes was, you would think with all the plastic surgery in Hollywood, they could afford thicker skin.
Yeah, they totally could. I mean, it was...
Which was fun.
It was hilarious. Anyway, moving on.
The cat is back.
The cat's back with the reinforcements.
Back. Yeah, with reinforcements. Next.
Last one, which can kind of segue us into the last part about the DC Universe thing.
You know, it's all making sense.
I put this in a particular order. Superman is currently shooting in Vancouver, I think.
Are they in Vancouver now?
They're moving to Vancouver at the end of this month, okay. So they might be still in the States. But it was released this week that the Zod's in this movie again, which is weird, but they're mocapping him.
Everyone freaked out when they showed the initial pictures of Superman standing on the street, and it was the girl, I can't remember her name now.
The chick who's playing the Kryptonian.
Yeah.
Bad chick.
The Ursa Not. Ursa Non, but Ursa Not, because it's Ursa, but not that name. The name from actual comic books.
You
whatever
lost
that.
Me.
Yeah. Anyways. There was a non-joke.
Oh.
You know, the guy who didn't talk. See how funny that is in retrospect?
Funny in retrospect.
Boy, do you feel bad.
Wow. We should have laughed harder.
Anyways, so they were showing him and then opposite her. But I noticed in all the pictures there was this dude standing next to her in a motion capture suit. And no one registered that until they had these other pictures showed up online. And that's Michael Shannon, isn't it? That's what his name, right? Michael Shannon? The dude from The Reader or whatever who got Oscar nominated? A Revolutionary Road, wasn't it? That he got nominated for an Oscar.
Oh, you know that woman's called Fiora in the movie.
Fiora, that's it. Yeah, she's an actual comic right character. Ursa and Non didn't exist before the Superman 2.
Oh, I see.
That's where I was going with that. Anyway, so yeah, it's going to be like, what, Ryan Reynolds and Green Lantern? Because that went so well.
I didn't see that one. You saw that one, so I can't really speak to it. But I mean, I saw the trailer.
You have an opinion?
Yeah, I thought it looked good. Of course, I have an opinion. I thought it looked good.
Everyone's got an opinion, yeah.
Yeah, I liked the
age of the internet.
I don't think I'm doing anything other than a CGI suit would have worked for the Green Lantern thing, anyways. But I mean, I haven't seen the full movie, so I can't. And you groaning tells me I'm wrong.
But that's a whole other episode. Anyways, so Zod, by the way, is mocap.
Yeah.
So, that's the point of this? Are you reading this for the first time?
I actually am now. Well, I'm trying to find the name of the dude who's playing General Zod now.
Michael Shannon.
Is it Michael Shannon? Okay, well, it doesn't really look.
It doesn't say his name in there. Michael Shannon. It's right there.
Sorry. There it is. He's playing Zod and he's going to motion capture. So why would they motion capture him? Because of the suit?
I guess.
What the hell are they going to dress him in?
I don't know.
That doesn't make any sense.
I'm not on set. I don't know.
Can you find these things out? See, weird. I'm not friends with Jack Zack Snyder. Well, George Lucas, and you know, Aronofsky, right. I'm good buddies with it. I don't know.
Right. But the weird thing, too, is why isn't she in mocap? Why is just him? Like, how is his, if they're both from Krypton, theoretically, or whatever, I mean, why isn't she in a mocap suit?
I don't know. They're
You don't know, do you?
Muscles or something? I don't know.
Well, you've seen the guy. You might have to add muscles.
I was looking for your speculation on it.
You
know nothing.
I thought there was more to it. I thought, okay, yeah, I that's a good question. Why was his... Is it just that scene, or is it through the whole movie? There's a lot of questions that have
to be answered. Are they going to CGI all of him?
Exactly.
It's hard to say. Maybe that's what they're going to do. Maybe they're going to turn into a full CGI character. But then again, perhaps. Why would you do it?
Because it's Zod. Are they going to make him look like Terrence Stamp? Because they could just get Terrence Stamp, I
he's
believe.
He's still alive.
He's alive. He was on Smallville.
He's looking
going back to Smallville.
Yeah, but he's got to be getting on, though. I mean, Terrence Stamp wasn't young when they did the Donna version. So.
Well, he was, actually.
Was he?
He was in his late 20s, I thought.
He was not in his late 20s when they did the Donna version. He can't.
You're right. I don't know.
You don't know, do you? You're just speculating. Anyway, this moves into our final part because
I'm speculating without knowledge.
We're actually right on time. We're doing perfect.
We're on the internet.
I know.
I don't need facts.
You sir. Don't. We can say anything.
We can say anything.
Superman right dies in this movie. Yeah. Take that. See if I'm right. You think it comes out in 2 years.
You would think they would promote that.
No.
Well, let's say Superman dies.
Oh, Death of Superman?
The Death of Superman, perhaps. Maybe like a comic book they did once.
Anyway, speaking of comic books.
Yes, comics. Anyways, the big latest, over the summer the big news was, I believe it is in May, the news broke that DC was restarting its whole entire line from number ones all across the board. Even the classics, Action Comics and Detective Comics, which began 75 years ago. So, are going back to number one.
We should talk background here for a second, in that I know very little about comic books, other than that I read a lot of graphic novels, mostly Batman, Superman, and some Hellblazer and stuff like that. Whereas Chris here is much more of a comic book guru.
Aficionado.
Aficionado was actually the word that came to my mind, but I couldn't think of how to pronounce it properly.
Because you don't want to sound stupid.
I don't want to sound like an idiot. No. Richie just undid all that. So,
this is the internet, remember.
I know. So anyway, Chris is a lot more well-versed in this kind of stuff than I am. So I'll be coming along on this part of the bit as more of a casual observer, where he's going to be probably actually much more cranky about what's going on in this whole thing. Continue.
Cranky? Wow. I don't like that inflection. No. But you will be contributing later on because
I'll have something to review. I'll have to talk about it.
Anyways, again, just the backstory before I was interrupted.
Sorry.
DC was restarting its whole entire line from number ones all across. So basically Action Comics number one. Superman back to, they're rebooting everything, so they're retelling. Of course, no one knows the origin of Superman after all these years, so they have to retell Superman's origin. They have to, everything is, again, starting over, except it seems that Batman and Green Lantern have sort of continued on, because they were actually selling books before this all happened, and they didn't want to piss off Grant Morrison or Geoff Johns, the writers. So, they were the books that they were working on, so they... Not really rebooting Batman and Green Lantern. They're sort of continuing on there, which again causes problems because it's like five Robins, and he's only been around for like 5 years. But and when did he have Damian? I mean, come on, that doesn't even make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Anyway, so
do that. It's
sidetracking here.
Plus, he's a little psycho.
Well, that's a whole other.
He castigates people.
Well, that's he's Robin.
How would Batman stand for that? Anyways, yeah.
Well. I think up until recently, they haven't really worked together. Because it was always Dick Grayson as Batman.
Yeah, and Damian that is true, I guess. Yeah, that's right.
They're just recently kind of like starting to get to know each other.
Fair enough.
I think.
I haven't read any of those, so I have no idea.
I wait for the trades myself, but that's me. So anyways, one of the big controversies about this whole thing, and something that really caught my attention, is the fact that they've taken Barbara Gordon, who was the original Batgirl. This is... Okay, already we're smirking over here.
Well, it's... I know how cranky you got about this one.
So let's inform the people at home, the three people that are listening, how cranky I can get for just scoffing at me, sir.
All right. He gets very upset about this kind of stuff.
And why are you listening if you're also scoffing at home, by the way? Why are you listening to this?
Anyway, scoff, obviously.
To scoff. Anyways, Barbara Gordon was Batgirl, dating back to the 60s or something or other, from the original... I believe she debuted on the Batman TV show, I could be wrong, and then they brought her into the comics.
She was the daughter of Commissioner Gordon.
There have been different variations, like Alicia Silverstone and that horrible Batman Robin movie.
Bad.
Where she was actually Alfred's niece and not related to Barbara Commissioner Gordon at all.
Make any sense.
But in the comic books, she was Batgirl until the storyline The Killing Joke by Alan Moore, where she was shot... as an afterthought, and as a plot point, frankly. Mm-hmm. And from there, not only shot, but actually, like, you know, her clothes taken off, and alluded to the fact that she might have been rigged by the Joker.
Yeah, it was a bit of a darker comic book, really.
A little bit, yeah. And basically the thinking behind that was, I believe the quote was, they were asking for permission, Alan Moore or whoever was asking permission, and DC said, yeah, go ahead, cripple the bitch. That was the eloquent way they said that.
Oh, nice of them.
Yes, it was a very nice thing for them to say. So, from that, Barbara Gordon was paralyzed, and then she went into a wheelchair, obviously, and then became, eventually, the character Oracle, which has become, over the time, my favorite personal favorite character of all time.
Really? Of all time?
All time.
Oh,
yes.
Everybody? Oracle's... I didn't know that.
Yes, that is.
Oracle's your favorite
one.
Character. Oh, so?
There's just more merchandise of Superman that I own. That's because they're just more merchandise of Superman.
Well, who would want to buy a t-shirt with a chicken wheelchair on it?
I would.
Other than you.
There are people out there.
Why is she a ferret?
She's a wonderful character. She's strong. She's determined. She's... does all these things despite the fact that she's in a wheelchair. The entire DC universe, and Batman in particular, need her. Mm-hmm. And rely on her for information.
Sure.
All these different things. Which made her such an interesting character as Oracle. It was really disappointing to me the fact that they wanted to turn her back into Batgirl. And that's where this is kind of all heading. Believe it or not, there is a point to this. So, you need something. Yeah, I have something to say, sir.
I know this.
You inhaled, so
no
I thought
no, I was breathing. I do that.
Okay. There's people at work who do that. They inhale before they have something to say, and I was like, okay.
No,
I know you have something to say now. Go ahead. Many articles, many people have commented this online over the past few months, ever since, I believe, again, May, that this was, the news came out. Comic-Con in San Diego was huge this year, different controversies about different things. DC Comics has not held this very well, in my opinion, especially given past things that they've, controversies that they haven't handled well. I thought they could have handled a lot better. People at Comic-Con, the idea was that they would go to panels and ask Dan Dido, Daddio, or I can't remember. I'm not sure how to say his name, and Jim Lee, the guys who run DC.
Yes.
The idea was to go there and ask them questions, and then someone would ask them a question they didn't like, and they were very belligerent about it.
Yeah, and you commented before that to me that they're assholes.
I was actually not bragging, but I was at San Diego Comic-Con in 2010, and I went to a DC Nations panel, and they were jerks about the whole... Another digression about Roy Harper. He had his daughter killed for a plot point. And then he had his arm ripped off, and there's all this stuff. And their basic thing was, just trust us. We know what we're doing. And here we are a year later, and Roy Harper has not benefited the least from this sort. So apparently they don't know what they're doing. Again, so for them wanting to say to people, just trust us, we know what we're doing, in the past they've said that, and they have not known what they're doing.
That explains Smallville.
Yes, I don't think we can necessarily blame them for Smallville, but...
No.
Maybe the fact that they existed, but I don't think they wrote it. Going back to that, again, many, many, many articles on this online. The one that I recently looked at was called Give Batgirl the Chair by Eric Glover on the Bleeding Cool website. This one actually almost seems to me this is a very, very long website, or a very, very long article, I should say. It almost looks like this was a term paper that he had to hand in for his thesis. It's a very, very long article. Again, looking at stuff online these days, it comes down to sometimes like two paragraphs and you're done. This one is, it kept going. But it was a lot of good stuff. I'm not going to read the whole article, obviously. It would be here all night. But little things I want to just talk about with the controversy related to Oracle being cured, not in the wheelchair anymore, and why this is kind of a big deal. Ever since DC Comics announced the seismic shakeup of its entire book line for this September, the move has sparked an incendiary reaction among readers, with one particular change fanning the most flames: DC's decision to return the paraplegic Oracle to her previous role as the able-bodied Batgirl. Because of the already slim share of characters living with disabilities in the DC universe, the sudden dismissal of Oracle's paralysis has not just been a point of contention for some fans, but also a puzzling contradiction to the spirits of DC's relaunch announcement. But aside from shuffling a few more black characters into the spotlight, DC won't be making any huge strides forward in diversity, leaving the meat of its heroes classically white, male, heterosexual, and possibly even more able-bodied once the relaunch hits. The loss of diversification offered by Oracle, a hero born of the real-world situation of both tragic and triumphant in nature,
is a disappointing step back for a company that once took pioneering steps in the Batgirl legacy. And again, it goes on from there. A lot of different stuff about this. It is kind of, to me, a step back. Oracle had become such a wonderful character. She's been around for about 20 years now, with mostly hanging out with the Birds of Prey and those kind of things, but also was a member of the Justice League. Their sort of information broker, prominent character in the Batman, whole Batman line, especially with No Man's Land and those kind of books. Mm-hmm. Very much a backbone of the whole thing. And for me, it's a step back with the character. I really love the Oracle character and what she represented. And for them to be going back like that, I think, is unfortunate. The only thing that sort of stopped people from just burning the mother down, in some respects, people who were really passionate about this, was the fact that Gail Simone was writing the book. She is actually was a former writer of Deadpool. I don't know if you knew that, but
I did not.
She's been a prominent writer for the last few years. She got her start starting up a website, actually tying into all this. She started a website called Women in Refrigerators, which was a reactionary website related to how women are treated in comic books, specifically, in some ways, DC. Mm-hmm. The Women in Refrigerators referred to Green Lantern, Kyle Rayner's girlfriend at the time, Alex Winter, I think her name was. I could be wrong. But basically, she was built up as this big, important character and then killed nonchalantly as, again, a plot device just to piss off Green Lantern and to make a B-level hero or B-level villain to be an A-level villain, which didn't work.
Yeah.
But the whole reason this woman was killed, off-screen even, was just to piss off Green Lantern. So, and that incited such incidents that this caused this website from Gail Simone, and then she parlayed that a bit, and to her advantage, I don't know what, make it sound like she was profiting off it or anything, but from that she became more famous in the comic book industry, and then went on to write Deadpool, and more recently DC Birds of Prey, one of my favorite books, Secret Six, one of my top books, that's an amazing book, also Adam, the all-new Adam, and some other ones as well. So a wonderful writer, and the fact that she was the one handling Batgirl number one and the Batgirl bringing Barbara back from paralysis to being Batgirl again, that somewhat calmed people down a little bit because Gail Simone had been writing Oracle for so many years and knew the character. It wasn't just someone brand new taking over. That leads us to Batgirl number one that was just released this week.
Yes, so you purchased it.
That we read online.
Yes.
This also leads into a discussion about DC Online, but that's later on. What did you think about reading, first of all, just reading a comic book on your laptop? How was that?
Actually, I didn't enjoy, like it as much as I thought it would.
Right.
I do like the idea of using electronic readers. I do have an e-reader that's just a black and white, which I use for reading novels, which I love, because the books are much more cheaper to purchase, and I just like the way that technology is going with that stuff. And I would like to try a color e-reader and see how a comic book works that way, but reading on my laptop, I like good, because you can't see the whole thing. That's kind of what irritated me the most about it.
Yeah, the same kind of with me. I'm sure there are, if more hardcore users who have done this before might know better, and maybe if I use this more often, I might get used to it. Reading a couple books beforehand. I read the Tiny Titans because they were free, frankly. Not because they were free. I read them because I didn't want to invest money in it, particularly at that point. Didn't want to give them my Visa number, but the Tiny Titans, that's actually a really good book for kids. Mm-hmm. I've got their trades, so I love the Tiny Titans. So I had fun reading that, but it's hard reading the small print. I had a really hard time going back to Batgirl number one when I actually decided to invest in it. And I said, okay, I'm going to give this a shot. Reading Batgirl number one, it was hard for me to read the fine print. A lot of the inner monologue that she had, I couldn't honestly read it at all. I couldn't find a zoom-in function. I'm sure there is. I'm sure people, again, the three people that are listening are like, what, are you stupid?
I can tell you're stupid. You double-click on it.
I tried that. It didn't work.
Oh, really? It even says that when you log into
the website.
Anyway, I didn't have that issue with it.
Anyways. But at the same time, I wasn't that disappointed because I wasn't all that enthralled with the writing.
Did you like it?
Honestly.
Did you like Gail's work or not?
I love Gail Simone, but I was not enthralled with this particular issue. It was strange to me. It's funny reading reviews online and all this other stuff, what people think about it. It didn't capture my attention, unfortunately. I really wanted to. I really, again, love Barbara Gordon and that character. I wanted to sort of give it a shot, even though I was not
happy with the whole Oracle thing. Mm-hmm. But it didn't capture my attention again. I'm just repeating myself now. But just the stuff like the inner monologue, and she's like, she's talking out loud as she's thinking to herself. Almost makes her seem schizophrenic in a way. Did you even notice that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the story of...
Like the one on, where she's standing on the ledge waiting to pounce or something, and she's talking about the whole, come to me, my little babies, or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is weird in itself, but she's also thinking to herself at the same time. It's like, it makes you seem like you're crazy. But that was one thing to me.
Yeah.
Stuck out.
Well, I mean, there was... If you haven't read the story, basically, I mean...
Spoilers!
Yeah, there are spoilers now. So if you haven't read it and you're going to read it, don't. Just shut us off. But if you want to hear about it, I mean, it's basically, the story starts off with her being Batgirl again, and just returning to being Batgirl, it seems like she's fresh and she's not entirely back fully into the whole scene again yet. But she's, she goes up against some criminals, and there's allusion to that she was in a wheelchair, and so basically it's not like they've rebooted it in that it never happened, but more that she's recovered, and she's better now. Which is weird, because, I mean, when you told me about it, I thought they're just going to write off that she was never Oracle, but apparently she was Oracle, and now she's not Oracle anymore, and after not using her legs for years and years and years, she's up fighting crime again. And so, but there's no reference to how she got better, just that it's a miracle and it happened. And
which you kind of see, okay, maybe they'll, hopefully they'll handle that later on with more detail, and they just wanted to get
they could
a
explain
bit of a story.
It was like the Lazarus Pit or some story element that would work, right? But it's, I don't know, it was just weird that, she seems just not as... Okay. Well, like I said, she's crazy. She's crazy. And that she's so much better now. It just doesn't make sense.
There was a lot of things. It was, again, they wanted it both ways. Again, back to the Oscar thing, where they wanted it both ways. It's like, okay, she's all better, and she's maybe a little rusty. Maybe this is his first adventure back in the cape. But, so there was that hesitation a bit, but then also she was just kicking ass as well. So they wanted it both ways, it seemed. I could kind of see, as a writer, how you have to... The elephant in the room of, okay, how is she walking again?
Yeah.
You might have to wait later on for a more, you know, issue 2, 3, 4, 5 to explain this. Obviously, I hope at least it's been a big thing that brought her out of this wheelchair. Apparently, it's after 3 years. She was shot by the Joker.
It's only 3 years?
Only 3 years, apparently. And apparently, this is, again, speculation online, but she wasn't Oracle. So she was shot, and then she was recovered. She was in a wheelchair for 3 years, but then somehow recovered, and it was a miracle, they say, as you said. But she was never Oracle, apparently. That's what, again, the speculation. It was never addressed in the book, but because it wasn't brought up, that's what people are speculating. So she just, again, I don't see really how they look at that and go, how that's not a slap in the face of disabled people. Because, I mean, how... Is,
handicapped,
like,
people ever just revolting against
DC? I'm not a handicapped person. I should not really be saying that. But, because, that's, again, a lot of people have online that said stuff like that. How it's like, people who are disabled, they want to look at Oracle. Because there are so few people, like, what, Xavier? You know, are so few people, the chief from Doom Patrol. Guys who are, people who are in wheelchair or not. Physically able, and yet they're still superheroes. But then other people say, well, if you're disabled, then you'd want a happy ending for Barbara, because you'd want her to get out of that wheelchair and continue to being Batgirl and kick some ass. So there's that back and forth. I don't really know myself what people think, because I'm not disabled, but I look at it as just the loss of a great character, and which is unfortunate. But
did you like anything about it?
I was actually, I'm trying to think, actually. I didn't hate it. I mean, I should try to say it that way. Maybe because I knew I was reading it, because I was going to review it. I might have been thinking more of like, okay, what don't I like? Because I have to talk about this. But it was kind of weird, too, because Barbara Gordon was always the fun character, the fun Batgirl. She wasn't trained by Batman initially. She was like Dick Grayson and Jason Todd. They went and they were trained by Batman. She learned it on her own, and she was always... She wanted to be Batgirl.
Yeah.
It wasn't thrust upon her. She wasn't told, okay, you got to do this now. It was like some Robins have. She just did it. In fact, she was told, like, you can't do this.
Right.
Batman said, you can't be Batgirl, but she did it anyways and then proved herself. So she was more... That was always that fun side of it as well.
Yeah.
Whereas with this was very drop-dead serious, the tone at least, I mm-hmm. thought. And it, well, little things too, like these people with these, with the killer with the scrapbook and
yeah.
stuff like that. I mean, it was kind of silly.
Yeah, it was a little bit hokey. The villains weren't really villains.
The villain who killed the guy with, by
didn't, yeah,
drowning him with his hose.
Yeah.
With his, I'm like, really? He didn't yeah, like, inflate him like a balloon?
Death by hosepipe.
Yeah, great. So I would like to give it another shot and hopefully it will get better, but there are very few of these titles in the new DC Universe that I will say that about. Going back to the overall, go ahead and say something.
Well, I mean, as far as good points go, the one redeeming quality it had, because
You definitely have a different perspective.
Yeah, I do. And I was definitely not as big a fan of Oracle as you were, because, I mean, it's just, yeah, she's a hacker and she's in a wheelchair, cool. She still helps out, that's great. But I never found it to be that amazing character. However, the turning her back into Batgirl seemed like, like I say, a bit of a slap in the face for anybody who liked her for that reason, that she was disabled. What I liked about the number one issue was that she's still damaged. And like there's a one scene there where she's someone points a gun at her and it's pointed kind of at her abdomen where she was yeah. shot by the Joker, and she starts to lose it because that's she's seriously scarred
like that.
By that. So I like, because that still has a redeeming quality to it, and that
yeah.
she's scared of going back to being that person again, of going back into the wheelchair. So that part yeah. of it kind of redeemed it a little bit for me.
What about the scene directly after that, where someone else pointed a gun at her?
That was a little weird.
I mean, I laughed at
it. It ended on a weird note. Yeah.
The very last panel of the book is, I think, kind of ludicrous.
Yes, it was silly.
I know it's a cliffhanger. They gotta be like, okay. I mean, not necessarily what Barbara says, but what the cop says to Barbara.
Yeah.
That, to me, I was like, what?
Are you kidding? Yeah, it didn't make much sense. It tried to end on a big cliffhanger, but left you wondering why they even bothered to do that. They could have left it, like, three panels earlier, and it would have been a much better cliffhanger. But, yeah, it has potential. I'll be interested to see where it goes.
Gail Simone had a quote on here I just wanted to say. This is her quote regarding the controversy. Arms or legs in the DC Universe. Arms or legs get ripped off, and they grow back somehow. Graves don't stay filled. But the one constant is that Barbara stays in the chair. Role model or not, it is problematic and uncomfortable, and the excuses to not cure her in a world of purple rays and magic and super science are often unconvincing or wholly metatextual. And the longer it goes on, the more it has stretched credibility. That's her sort of response to the controversy and people saying, why are you doing this?
That's true, though. I mean, Batman was in a wheelchair for a while there, and he had his back broken, same kind of deal, so why can't she come out of it? She's a strong man character. It makes sense.
Yes. And that's, to me, I don't buy that.
You're not going to buy it because you like the character, and they took her out of the wheelchair.
I
you're
know.
Upset about
you know what?
It.
Honestly,
okay.
Again, this is probably a weird thing to say if someone in a wheelchair is listening to this, but I always saw it as a choice that Barbara stayed in the chair for some reason. Because she could. There was even an issue of Birds of Prey, where they fought. It's back then. It was Oracle and Black Canary in the Birds of Prey. They fought Ra's al Ghul, went to the Lazarus Pit, and Black Canary went into the Lazarus Pit and got her sonic scream back. I know this is very hardcore. No one cares, but Oracle actually was right there at the Lazarus Pit, and it was sort of hinted that she could have, and she didn't.
I see.
So from that issue, I sort of saw it as she saw herself as, in the role of Oracle, more valuable. And actually, the last couple of years, actually, as you saw in No Man's Land with Cassandra Cain,
mm-hmm.
and then later on Stephanie Brown, the latest Batgirl, she has moved on to a mentor kind of role.
Yeah.
And I thought, as again, both as Oracle and as the mentor for the new Batgirls, and also again in Birds of Prey, that role that she had there, I thought was way more valuable. As someone who had been through the trenches and obviously suffered very tragically
yep.
at the hands of a guy like the Joker, but she fought on. She couldn't still be Batgirl, but she, damn it, she was going to go and keep fighting for justice. You know,
and
eloquently put, I think,
and
myself.
Now they fucked all that up. Basically. They screwed the whole universe up for you.
One more quote. I mean, we're getting back to the Batman. Apparently there were a lot of problems with the writers at DC Comics in regards to Oracle, actually making it out somehow that she actually made Batman less efficient. A lot of readers and other editors had story problems with Oracle, and that she made for such an easy, convenient story accelerator that we missed the sense of having characters to have to struggle to discover to solve mysteries. If
Famously, it helped make Batman less of a detective and more of a monster hunter.
That's actually kind of true, I suppose.
Well, I think that's crap.
Well, it's not true, because he ended up relying on her. That does make sense.
Well,
I buy into that. I'm into that theory.
I mean, and to my credit, I am saying it, being my own devil's advocate here. But the final one, a quote from Gail Simone, I want to say, from 2006, when they were asked many times over, it seemed like every Comic-Con they would ask, okay, is Barbara ever going to come out of the wheelchair? They finally, a couple years ago, again, Dan Didio, or however you say his name, Dido. It's one of those names you always see in writing, but I've never heard
pronounced. You never have to speak it, so you know how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
He actually said never. He had one answer. It was one word, never. And then going back on that. But one more again from Gail Simone from 2006. She's fantastic. We're talking about Oracle. She's fantastic because even just sitting in a chair in a dark room by herself, she's tremendously compelling. The DC without her would be a much less interesting place.
Huh.
That's about Oracle.
These people know George Lucas? They all get
tying it all back to George Lucas.
All hypocrites.
So,
all hypocrites.
Yeah. I wanted to give Batgirl a chance, and I am still, I mean, it could be 6 issues down the road, it could be the greatest thing ever.
Could
but
be.
That first issue I'm not really thrilled with.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair
enough. But you give it a thumbs in the middle or a thumbs up? Or?
I'm still willing to see where it goes. I didn't mind it so much just because of the damage part. I didn't like the ending. I didn't like the beginning either. I guess I liked a bit in the middle. That's all I liked about it.
You're just antagonizing me. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I was like irritating
you. Yeah. You gotta do the Siskel in my Ebert.
I do. Oh, don't label is like
I'll
that.
Be the fat one. You be
the bald one. I'll be the skinny bald one.
Sure.
I'm the one that died.
You die.
Oh, that's no fun then.
But then I get cancer.
Aha! Screw you.
I can't talk.
Take that.
He's not very good on a podcast. He can't talk.
Oh, that's a shame. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we're gonna bring this on the down note now.
Yeah, we'll end this on a very depressing
talk
note.
Talk about Roger Ebert.
Siskel's dead and Ebert can't talk.
He's
anymore.
An amazing person, but he can't talk.
I don't think he's that amazing. I didn't like his movie.
I like him. No. I love Roger Ebert. You know,
he's right there with Nancy Grace.
Oh my god.
That's right.
I'm going to go over this table. You're comparing Roger Ebert to Nancy Grace?
Yes. Well, not comparing. I'm just saying it's the same kind of level.
Wow.
I dislike both
of them.
You know,
the funniest thing I read about Nancy Grace recently was Casey Anthony.
Yeah.
Is that with the woman?
Yeah, the chick who killed her daughter.
Yeah, someone posted on there that. She killed her kids? Or
she killed her. She drowned her daughter. But there's no evidence.
And then they found out she was not guilty or acquitted her or whatever?
She was found not guilty in a court of law. Yeah.
Someone said online that if they're looking for the killer, they should look at Nancy Grace because obviously she's benefiting from this, from her ratings from her show.
Her ratings went up because she lost her fucking mind on TV about it. Yeah.
That's what the joke was.
Yes. I mean, she's always done that, though. I mean, that's Nancy Grace.
I hate Nancy Grace.
Oh, so do I. Awful woman. Is she on Dancing with the Stars?
Yes.
Horrible.
Yes.
As soon as those judges give her any kind of negative comment, she's like just going to unhinge her jaw and swallow them whole.
She'll use it to be humble.
I don't think she'll be humble. I can't see it. She'll be shouting.
I'd rather see her lose her shit.
Frankly, I won't watch the show myself.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Dancing with the Stars fan.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to wrap this up because we're almost at our hour and a half point here. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, really. We talked for that long.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, well, you're shocked that you and I can hold a conversation for that long. We're going to keep doing this.
I'm going to like this on Facebook.
Oh, you should.
If you ever figure it out.
If I ever figure out how to put it on the internet, yeah. hopefully this will be posted next week, which you guys won't care because it'll be new to you. But we're going to keep doing this. We're going to do it for a couple months, see how it goes, and see if there's any kind of following here. If people actually listen, if there's anyone ever listening to this, that'd be great.
We're recording this in August 2007, just so you know.
September, mate.
September 2007.
2007? Oh, yeah. I see what you did there. Funny.
See? Apparently you didn't.
I didn't. No, first, no. Anyways, this has been our first episode of Trilogy, and we'll keep doing it. And it'll probably become a bit more structured the more we get used to actually doing this. But it'll be up on planetkibi.com, God willing, and under the Podcast Nation page with a couple of podcasts. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. You'll be able to get on iTunes. And so this is me, Andrew Buckley, saying goodnight.
And if any of you caught that, that was him saying goodbye.
He I'll listen to it afterwards.
Babbling
it'll be
a little bit.
I do babble. I apologize.
Mumbling and babbling at the same time.
Not
it's
mumbling.
Crazy.
And the cat says, thank
you
for listening.
Are you sure you're recording?
Yep, this is, that's what we're recording.
I hope we're recording.
All right, good
night. Night.
Meow.